Hi, this is Daniel Jalkut.
And this is Manton Reese.
And this is Core Intuition, Too Distracted to Name This Episode.
Well, hello again, Daniel, and welcome, everybody. We promised we would record another Core Intuition before C4, and we're doing it.
I can't believe we are actually following through with our commitment to our listeners.
Well, I haven't actually edited or posted it yet, so we'll see how the next 3 days go.
Kind of gets tough, I know, in the lead up to traveling. Sometimes those last few days just get filled up with other obligations for work and everything else. So we'll see what happens. But I bet we're going to have this out in time for our friends to listen on the flight to Chicago.
Yeah, we will. So what's been new in the last couple weeks for you? Are you excited about the show and anything else coming up that we haven't talked about yet?
I have some interesting news. Actually, Red Sweater was acquired by Intuit.
Mm-hmm.
So okay. I think it'll be a popular move for all of our users. And I know that Intuit is a highly trusted and popular brand on the Mac. So I think this is a win-win-win.
That's great. I mean, it's very consistent with Intuit buying random companies because they don't know how to improve their existing products.
Just to clarify, everybody, no, Intuit did not buy Red Sweater. But there's been this kind of wildfire reaction to Intuit's acquisition of the online finance application called Mint. I don't use that. Do you use it?
You know, I do use it. I just started literally like a month ago, and so I'm a little bit bummed that I finally got around to using it, because I've been hearing good things about it, and I was a little bit worried about, I don't know, who are these guys? Do I really want to give them like every one of my bank accounts and credit card passwords? But I tried it, and it's awesome. I mean, it's very, very well done, and it's one of the first financial tools that is just sort of like when you have things set up, it only takes a couple minutes, and then you have the picture of everything right there. It's very slick.
It sounds really cool. It's something I had been thinking about trying too for a long time now. And you know what? I'm just impressed though by people who love this service were literally on Twitter announcing that they were canceling their accounts like immediately, right? And yeah. I guess it sounds like maybe you have not decided to cancel your account.
I have not. I don't know what I'm going to do, to be honest, because I really do like it. Lots of people were disappointed because they thought that Mint was going to be, they were going to take on the big traditional established companies, and now they sell out.
Right. You know, I don't have a lot of love for Intuit, but I think I'm not really among the people who has felt personally injured by them. I guess a lot of it's based on, did they actually have a situation where they lost user data on Quicken or something? I don't know. Allegations here flying wildly, but I was kind of shocked when I saw how sort of matter-of-factly people were just dropping the service. And mm-hmm. I have to assume that it's based on, you know, I saw some reference to bozo moves, I guess, that mm-hmm. may have been done by the company.
I don't know about lost data, but there's definitely a history of like not supporting Mac users very well. And so like the Mac versions of their products have always been sort of either one step behind or just different and incompatible with the Windows versions. And then I guess a couple years ago, they promised, you know, we're going to rewrite Quicken, we're rebranding it for the Mac. It's going to be Cocoa. It's going to be brand new. And then they just keep delaying the ship date again and again. I think people are just really disappointed that they haven't been able to follow through on that and other things. But one, I will give them credit for one thing, I think, is that they have a blog. I don't subscribe to it, of course, but Intuit has a blog. And they keep the comments open, and they let people post to their blog just these kind of rants that we're talking about. I was glad to see there's a little bit of openness and a little bit of customer interaction there that's actually public that you can see. So they don't just stamp on the user comments or say, you know, not going to show anyone the negative stuff that you're saying about our company.
Wow. Well, I think given the length of time I've waited to try it out, I'll probably hold off now and see how this all plays out. I guess if I guess it's up to Intuit now to sort of establish some consistency with their reliability and convince Mac users, I guess, who have maybe closed their accounts to come back.
So we had one thing we were going to talk about from a while back that keeps coming up, with which is advertising and how you promote your product. And I recently tried to experiment with AdWords. Have you ever played around with Google AdWords to promote Red Sweater stuff?
Yeah, I have played with it. It's been sort of, I haven't been sure how useful it's been. And so it's been on my kind of long-term to-do list to, I made myself a rule, which is I can't do AdWords until I have a reliable means of interpreting the results, right? So I did try a couple times where I, you know, maybe spent a few hundred dollars on AdWords and wasn't really sure whether it did anything. So, you know, the thing to do is to have some kind of fulfillment tracking, right? Where you can say, okay, 5% of people who clicked this ad ended up downloading, and then 1% of them ended up buying, or something like that. And right. I don't have that infrastructure set up right now, so I'm just sort of afraid of AdWords because I don't understand how much of an impact it's making. But I'd like to get back into it. I know some people have been pretty successful with, you know, increasing their sales with some very well tuned AdWords. So is this something you tried recently?
Yeah, I did. I got some little promotion where you got like $50 free AdWords credit or something, and so I thought it would be worth trying. To be honest, I haven't had any success at it. I know other Mac developers have used AdWords, and you know, some have said it's great. It's a good part of how they attract visitors to their site. But yeah, I didn't have any luck. I think the combination of my keywords were not right. No one was clicking on my ads. And even if they did click on my ads, the keywords that I was choosing, I felt like were ridiculously expensive. So I had to really monitor things closely because I was afraid. I think there was someone were like $4 or $5 a click. And, you know, you have to sell to almost everyone that clicks through for that to be worthwhile. And so it seemed like that would have the, I had this fear that I would log into AdWords the next day and I'd owe Google, you know, like $200, and I would have had like 2 sales from that or something.
And what exactly makes you think that Viagra is the right word to buy?
All right. Well, at least if with that, people maybe would have clicked on it. Maybe that's the trick. Maybe the keywords need to be Viagra and then just in fine print in the description, you know. And also manage your Mac videos.
One of my problems back when I had last looked at it, I don't know if they've improved this situation. I recall not being able to easily sort of target only Mac users. I know at some point in the past they actually restricted people from using the word Mac in an ad's text, and I think they've loosened up that restriction now. I know that. Some time ago, you could use the word Mac only after you got Apple to contact Google on your behalf, saying that they were allowed to use that. You know, you're allowed to use the word in a non-deceptive way. Do you know if they have anything now? I always wished that they would offer a sort of a screen in the delivery of the ads to say, like, only deliver this to Mac-based browsers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I didn't see anything like that. I don't think they have that. I tried some things with Mac in the keywords and some without, and they definitely have lifted some of that, some of those restrictions. But I also wonder how many potential customers actually put Mac in their query. I don't know how many Mac users actually think about that.
Yeah, that's a good question. One of the challenges I think is, you know, targeting your audience without then also paying for, you know, 90% of your clicks being from people on Windows that can't actually use the software.
Right.
So that, yeah, when I did try it, I tried to put Mac pretty front and center, but then you're right that it may have missed people who were just working, just looking for, say, blog editor, not Mac blog editor. Generally speaking, I'm sort of the mind now that I sort of feel like it's more worth my effort to fine tune Google search results, which of course are free, and it's like, I guess before I go off and pay too much on AdWords, I would be curious to see how much I can optimize the results of, you know, people just typing in what they want.
Yeah.
Obviously, if you pay for an ad and it pops up right there at the top, that's one way to do it. But if you can actually be the most relevant search result in Google's eyes, then you get the ad for free, basically, right? So
absolutely, and people are much more likely to click on a real search result than an ad. Yeah. That's for WeTransfer from the beginning. I don't know how I lucked out and on having just excellent, you know, Google PageRank and search results. So almost all my sales seem to come from Google, and just on a day-to-day basis when there's no article linking or blog linking or anything. And there's a couple keywords where I'm always in the top 10, and I don't see how having an ad would change that or help that in any way, since it's just sort of naturally at the top. But yeah, it's something I may play with a little more. I'm getting a lot more requests from people for me to advertise in their magazine or on their website or their ad network. And I'm also turning all those down, because in general, it's really difficult to know where to spend money. And it seems like you really have to have kind of a larger amount of money to play with, to experiment with. And it just seems like, at least for me right now, my time is better spent improving the product and sort of promoting it in free channels.
Yeah, there's this, I don't know a lot about advertising, but I know sort of that one of the alleged requirements of advertising is that it has to be repetitive. Like, I guess, you know, a potential customer sort of, it may be different with this Google AdWords thing, because so often it's coming up as like a search result. But when I hear about people doing ad campaigns, it usually involves trying to get customers to see the message, like, you know, three or more times.
Mm-hmm.
And it, like you're saying, if you just sort of experiment with a, you know, one-time spray of Google ads, then you might not actually be achieving that goal. So you have to sort of sustain the effort. You know, the whole question of how do you measure it, and how do you say, like, you know, if I could spend some money, $100 a month, say, on Google ads, and have like a verifiable measurement that it's, you know, it's increasing sales by $500 a month, then it's pretty, you know, it's a fairly good return, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I just think it's hard to get that kind of a measurable result, and you have to do it for a certain length of time in order to convince yourself it's actually, you know, achieving what you think it's achieving.
I agree. It just feels fragile to me. Like, any, even when you do have it working and all the gears are turning and you can see sort of the investment and then the return, it just seems like at any point in time, it could just all come crashing down and you're paying and the links aren't coming in for some reason.
Right, right. Manton, why don't we take another listener question? We've got a nice little list here to choose from. And I think this is a good question for us this week, especially in light of C4 coming up. It comes from Bill Williams, who is on Twitter, FL Patriot. And he asks, what are your techniques for overcoming distraction?
Yeah, good question. I mean, that's constantly battling that, it seems like. I should be coding right now. In fact, I'm recording a podcast. So there's a couple things that I've been doing lately, and these are sort of obvious that everyone talks about, but I don't have news or Twitter or email or anything notify me when things are happening. I'm always going and checking those things when I feel like it. And so at least carving out a couple hours or 30 minutes or however long and focusing on one thing without dialogues popping up and getting distracted with that. And just trying to carve out time to focus on one problem and getting it done. I don't know. What do you think about that question? Is there any tips you have lately?
I was in NetNewsWire. just kidding. I have a hard time with this. So this is kind of like I don't know if I could really offer any of my advice as actually being successful. I guess I sort of pull it together, but I am a pretty distractible person. I will often find myself in that situation where I'm looking at the clock and asking myself, how the heck did I, sit down to do some work today? And now it's 2 hours later and, I'm all caught up on YouTube. No, it can be difficult. I don't hate to, but I hesitate to endorse my own application as a tool here. But I do sometimes find flex time to be useful for this because it's sort of like it doesn't prevent me from becoming distracted, but it can do a pretty good job of reminding me that I've become distracted and to kind of get me back into line. So I will sometimes just set it up to encourage me throughout the day to get back on track, get back to doing what you're supposed to be doing. One of the great benefits of being independent and not having a boss is also one of the, the big drawbacks that nobody is going to be imposing their time frame or schedule on me. So it's probably not a coincidence that it wasn't until I became an indie developer that I had the motivation to develop an application like FlexTime, because you sort of end up in this situation where you have all the time in the world and none of the time in the world, right? Because you probably experienced this recently when you were going chugging ahead towards 1.0 on your ClipStart application. Nobody's going to say this has to be out by July. Nobody's going to say, you're fired if you don't finish this.
Well, my wife might say that. I don't know.
Oh, yes. You have the.
She's threatened to fire me several times on this product.
So. Your marital CEO, huh?
Yeah.
That's convenient. Yeah. So aside from that, I think your advice is good. Try to keep the sort of self-indulgent distractions like Twitter and email notifications and that kind of stuff. Try to keep that to a minimum. I think a lot of us have the experience that phenomenal productivity you can sometimes have on like a long flight where you have your laptop and no Wi-Fi and you're just sort of stuck in this chair. And I sometimes find that I just end up with it feels like I've done several days of work in a 5 hour stretch.
Yeah, completely.
That kind of sort of detached thing can be helpful. Mm-hmm. I ran into, Dan Morin, he's a writer for Macworld. He lives here in Somerville.
Yeah.
And I ran into him at a local cafe and I was like, what are you doing here? And he says, well, I don't have an account for their Wi-Fi here. So he comes to this, cafe when he's dedicated to the idea of getting some quality, non-distracted work time.
Yeah.
And I think those kinds of tricks can be useful to just go somewhere where you can't connect. It's getting harder and harder because, Wi-Fi is becoming pretty omnipresent, and people who have, phones that offer tethering, a lot of people are pretty connected most of the time, even if they were trying not to be. Mm-hmm. But I think that can be a real. I have tried that trick as well, to just go to a cafe and that I know doesn't have Wi-Fi or that has Wi-Fi that costs money that I won't pay for.
I have the opposite. When I go to a cafe that the Wi-Fi doesn't work, I spend hours instead of working trying to get it to work, and so I think it's the beating my head against their firewall or router or whatever that's not working correctly.
Yeah, I've been guilty of that as well. It's kind of like all this work just to I don't know, check your Twitter.
Right, changing your environment helps me a ton. Last week, I took my daughter. She has a synchronized swimming thing in the evening, one night a week. Well, a couple nights. But anyway, I took her last week. Oh, great. Should have muted my phone. 1 second.
There's a good example of a distraction, right?
Hello? Oops. Are you there?
Yep.
Sorry. Oh, great. What was I saying?
this is a perfectly timed, the perfectly timed interruption for distraction talk.
Yeah. Oh, boy. So getting... So last week, there was one night where I was away. I was at the swimming pool. They had Wi-Fi, but I was completely out of my element. I'm not usually there. And for some reason, I was able to just really focus. I had an hour and a half to get something done, and it was a nice evening. I was sitting outside, and I got more done, you know, in that hour and a half than I had gotten in the last couple of days done.
Yeah.
And that same thing happens usually. I'll walk up to the coffee shop and just getting out of the house, even when the kids aren't here and I wouldn't actually be distracted in my own house because there's not really anything else going on. Just changing locations sometimes makes me able to think about things and focus. And also the fact that, you know, okay, I'm not going to sit at this coffee shop for 8 hours. I'm only going to be here a few hours probably. And so let's see what I can get done in that limited period of time.
Right. So artificial kind of constraints I found are very helpful. And that's another thing I'll do with flex time is to say, okay, I've only got an hour now to work on, you know, this job. And when you feel like you've only got an hour for something, suddenly you don't feel as free to, you know, browse the web or check your Twitter Twitter. I'm on the Twitter with the goggles. I got the goggles and they're searching on my tweeters. Yeah, so anyway, that's our best answer, huh?
Yep, that's all we've got.
That's all we've got. You took it out of us.
So we have another question from Brian Cook. He asks, I think Daniel mentioned hiring a designer part-time on his blog, maybe also on the podcast. I'm curious how that's working out. And real quick, just related to what we were just talking about, Brian Cook has an app called Concentrate that just came out, and it's for concentrating on focusing on something and blocking out, I think, other applications or the network. Actually, I don't exactly know how it works, but the idea is, you know, focusing, saying, you know, you set up the app and you say, I'm working on this, leave me alone. I don't want to worry about the other apps. But that's a good question. We haven't talked about design in a while. How's that going?
Well, you know, I had this big ambitious idea that it was time to really up the ante and have like a, you know, a permanent or semi, you know, whatever, a residual designer working with me. And so I kind of did like the full-on hiring process as far as interviewing and, you know, maybe not interviewing per se, but really evaluating work and emailing back and forth with designers. The process was interesting, and sort of as a result of the process, I think I learned that just how difficult it was to sort of find one person who's the ideal partner for all the types of design stuff I might need to do. So I'm not saying, you know, I sort of hope one day that there'll just be like this perfect match of a person who is, you know, everything I want done in design, that they do it. They're, you know, excellent at web design, excellent at UI interaction on the Mac, and you know, also do print design or whatever. But what I learned sort of evaluating the different skills of people who applied to work with me, there's no good reason for me at this point not to just sort of pick and choose from people who are particularly good at one thing or another. So you know, for icon design, I'm not going to pick the same designer generally that maybe is a really great web UI designer. Turned out that I have been getting some design help for a few different projects, but the way I've been doing it is just on a case by case basis. I do have one woman working with me. It's sort of a open ended. I have a contract signed with her that covers confidentiality and stuff like that, but it doesn't prescribe like a specific amount of work per month or anything like that. That was my thinking at the beginning, was that it would be like a retainer type situation, because I really sort of loved the idea of just every little thing that I had always put off because I don't have design help. I liked the idea of just getting all that done. But then I sort of realized that it doesn't really work that way too well. It's like I sort of felt like oh, I'd just be constantly trying to dig up some little thing to do to fill up the time. And I sort of realized it would be smarter to collect those little things into larger, discrete jobs that I could, you know, arrange with people to do. So that's where basically where that is. It's been great having some, you know, I have some like stuff I'm doing on Mars Edit that requires a little new graphic touches. And it's been great to just have a really good icon done for some of this stuff instead of trying to, you know, poke something out myself with Acorn.
But that's nice to have options and have people available that you trust. That's always been something I've been pretty poor at. I have one guy who did the icons for my two indie apps, and he's pretty good about doing new stuff, but I don't feel like I have quite the good relationship with any designers or multiple designers, even better. This is actually something I've been thinking about in the last couple of weeks, because I really need to update the Clipstart icon, because it has a big like flip video sort of looking camera on it.
Yeah.
Because when I originally came up with the idea for the app, you know, a year and a half ago or whenever, that was a really popular way to take video, and it was, there weren't a lot of good apps that worked with it. Uh-huh. And so that my app was going to fill that. But now it's like, you've got the iPhone, you've got the iPod Nano with video, and it's, I feel like the icon is really misleading.
Yeah, that's interesting, because obviously the flip is still incredibly popular, but you didn't, it's kind of like this great gift that Apple's giving you to suddenly emphasize video and in a way that, you know, you can be compatible with it. But it also does sort of change the image I think people have of what a compatible video camera looks like.
Yeah.
And you might not be able to use I could imagine Apple being a little bit more anxious about you using an actual iPhone image, or, you know, a likeness of an iPhone. So what do you...
Yeah, they will reject my app right away. Oh, wait, no, they won't reject it.
They'll just send me...
No, yeah, there definitely would not be cool with that. And I mean, I thought about, should I have like a couple sort of camera looking things on it? I still don't know what the right solution is. I think even better than something realistic would be just sort of an abstract sort of design that implies you're dealing with video.
Yeah, something classic and film oriented would be kind of cute.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah, so that's ongoing. I need to work on that. And this question really reminds me that needs some attention. You never know how those little things like the icon not representing the app, how that affects customers. I mean, they visit your site, maybe they see that icon and like, oh, that, you know, that's not for me. That's for some other camera. Or, you know, I have no idea how that affects people's first impression of the app.
One of the great things about having a designer working with you, and it's something that I've sort of underappreciated in the past, is first of all, there's a spectrum of developers, how they view design. At the far wrong end of the spectrum is the developers who are not good designers and yet don't see any reason why they should have any designer help at all. So, you know, this approach, I think, is embodied by every application on Linux. Right?
Yes.
And then there's like the next step up from that, like, you know, emerging from the pond scum of you know, evolution, is a type of attitude that I think I have been guilty of and am still guilty of, which is to think of yourself as a perfectly good designer who just can't execute it, right? So you think like, oh, I know exactly how to design things. It's just I'm no good with Photoshop, and, you know, I know what looks good. And what I've learned working with a really talented designer, by the way, the woman I've been working with mostly is Anne Halsall, and she's a former Google designer, actually. But amazingly, she worked at Google and doesn't do hideous, ugly design. Or maybe she did do hideous, ugly design for Google because that was what they asked for. But anyway, she what's been really great working with her is reminding me that, you know, partly it's just having another brain on the job of trying to imagine how things should work and how things should look.
Yeah.
But it's been on this one product in particular I've been working with her on, it's just been like, there's been a few moments where it's like, oh, holy cow, I didn't even consider that this whole thing would be better rearranged this way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really where having another, you know, it's probably partly just like I said, having another person in general. I'm sure if I had another person, another developer, working with me and looking at my code, that there would be moments like that. But it's just nice to be sort of taken down a notch and remind myself, oh, I'm actually not trained in, you know, visual aesthetics. You know, I'm sort of like I'm self-trained perhaps more than some developers, but this person actually has, you know, this as their talent. So being able to leverage some of that is a really great reason to have professional designers involved, I think.
Yeah, that's great. So I'll see you on Friday, and everyone else who's heading out to C4, definitely say hi.
Yep. Look forward to, there's a list that, go to twitter.com/FraserSpears, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's posted a link to a spreadsheet with people who have volunteered to add their name to the list, indicating that they will be at C4. So we'll put a link to that in the show notes.
Sounds good.
All right. See you later this week, Manton.
Okay. Bye.